It's a hump day on RBKD. Let's do it today on the show. The Longhorns going to be rolling out the red carpet for the mullet. That'll be on Saturday. We'll get into that. Maybe some possible other guys, quarterbacks the Texans could go after. The Big 12 will be changing with coordinators. Got some guys coming in, someone leaving. And we are going to talk about the name, image, and likeness era and the landscape, how it's changing. A lot of purists getting upset. He went from DB High to DBU, somehow ended up in Detroit. He can be a purist at times. He's in more private clubs than a swinger. He's as open-minded as anyone you're going to meet, yet discriminates against white condiments. He's a football theorist. He's an All-American. He is the one, the only, Rod Babers.
And my co-host, he's a lifetime Longhorn, but first and foremost, he's a lifetime Austinite. A conservative liberal like the great Bun B, but he doesn't discriminate, which is why his dating history looks a lot like a commercial for the Rainbow Coalition. My man was a reality TV star before Urban Dictionary was a thing. And yes, he's only got one ball, but more testicular fortitude than you or your whole team. That is my man, the estimable Kevin Dunn. What's going on, brother?
Doing great. How are you doing?
Doing good, man. Hump day.
Hump day.
Hump day, baby. All right. Time to get downhill, headed to the weekend. Nothing like it. So
I just got to get through it. A lot of people getting through it right now are already on their way home. If you are, congrats. Enjoy the show. We have a lot of stuff to get to. Another beautiful day in Austin, Rod. And once again, nippy in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's that first change of the season. It is.
Feels great. It got warm today a little bit.
It was both. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't cold this morning, but you could feel it a little bit. It was brisk and definitely started to warm up. And so it's that time of the year. But I don't deal with the cold maybe as well as I used to. And I love the cold. But it's that first one, even in New York, it's the first time where it changes, first time your body feels it. That always has gotten to me a little bit, especially as a kid.
Yeah, no, I would never utter those words. I love the cold.
Oh, I do.
Patrick, he said, I love the cold.
I do.
I do not love the cold.
See, yeah, I got to see. Me and Patrick are probably on the same page with that one. No, love the cold?
Yeah.
Love the cold. I like some of the scenic, picturesque views you can get in cold weather places.
If you're in the warm looking at it?
No. Even when you're there, like, I mean, around this time, like around the holidays.
Yeah, I can enjoy the cold.
I can enjoy the cold.
I don't love the cold.
Yeah, I do. Love it.
I love cold weather.
I like some of the scenes in.
And I've lived in it, so don't give me you haven't lived in it.
Like the plants, though. I know I've lived in it for a while.
I'll say the fifth year there, though.
Unfortunately.
I just liked it.
Exactly.
You fell out of love with it.
Yeah, I fell out of love, but I still liked it. Like a marriage, it was just heading downhill.
I don't even know if I really like the cold, but I agree. Like at times, there's certain things about the cold that I can like, but only for certain periods at a time.
Yeah, well, if I was outside for 5 hours that's a different deal.
I know, but living there, I did not love the cold.
I did.
No. See? Yeah. No.
Different strokes for different folks.
You're damn right.
We got Patrick Davis, who's behind the glass, and Patrick is a jack of all trades here at the station. We appreciate him hanging out here. Lots to get to, and still actually some stuff. I was going through it today, just some of the stuff even over the weekend. Not even games, but just stories. This is one of those times usually where it slows down a little bit.
Yeah.
But Rob, we're just getting story after story after story. They're piling up every single day. It's a little different. Certainly in these parts, the story, or at least the main concentration has been on Quinn Ewers.
Yep.
And Quinn Ewers has put himself into the portal. Sark already met with him and his family reportedly and met with him, I'm assuming, in Dallas. And Texas, it seems like it's Texas and Texas Tech. The TCU would be that third club. We had heard Texas A&M originally. Haven't seen much more after that. But we're going to get into name, image, and likeness, kind of more of a overall landscape of it because it's changing so quickly. We'll do that at 4 o'clock. But in terms of what's going on right now with Texas, they're trying to upgrade the quarterback position, something Sark has talked about. And this quarterback room could look a lot different next year.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's pretty obvious that Sark intends to upgrade the quarterback position. I'll give my man Chip Brown some credit. He had a piece over at Horns 24/7, and I believe it came out a couple of days ago, his insider piece. And in it, he talks about how, according to his sources, that it looks like Sark's going to bring in two quarterbacks. He's trying to bring in a veteran quarterback via the transfer portal and potentially in addition to Quinn Ewers.
Yeah.
Like that's what he's trying to boost the quarterback position, or infuse it, I should say, with some more talent.
He's trying to flip the room.
Well, and I think he knows, like we all do, it's inevitable that Hudson Carter, Casey Thompson, whichever one it doesn't work out for, is probably going to transfer. Hell, there's a chance that both of those guys could transfer. And truth is, I haven't even heard Charles Wright's name. So, hell, he could be transferred.
He wasn't third team as the season ended. I have no idea why.
I'm with you. I don't know. Maybe they just like, I'll be going to work. But I'm like, man, at one point, Texas, both quarterbacks were hurt, and I never even heard his name.
Right. So, Roshan was the third quarterback.
Yeah, so you could have two out of those three end up transferring. You know, I mean, in the near future, depending on how things work out in the spring and how many quarterbacks you get. So, according to Chip Brown's sources, two transfer portal quarterbacks, potentially a veteran and a Quinn Ewers type. But he said, in addition to the Malik Murphy coming in 2022, and then you'll have, like I said, Hudson Card, Casey Thompson, and Charles Wright on the roster. And if you want to look at the other quarterbacks in the portal, even if you bring in a Ewers, he still may want a veteran quarterback to bring in. I think he understands as an insurance policy, because one of those other two could decide they're disgruntled and they want to transfer, and that's well within their right. Especially now they can do it without penalty. You might need to bring in an insurance policy, a contingency plan. And I hate to say that he's planning on one of those guys transferring, but he's planning on.
Yeah.
On this plan, I think he's planning on one of them transferring, because he knows that's just a transfer rate of blue chip quarterbacks is 50%, and you got two of them.
Flip the room, that's kind of what I'm talking about. If you bring two guys in, it'll flip on its own. One or two of those guys, Hudson Card and Casey Thompson, would probably transfer at that point. But look, he did not really mince words when he was talking about it postseason and said, we're going to have to upgrade that position. And they need to. Neither of those guys were as consistent. Were there tons of things around that probably started that with offensive line? Yes. But neither of those guys were consistent enough. I think it's the right move.
It is the right move. But I will say that I thought before the injury, Casey Thompson was putting together some consistency. But the injury, you know, and I don't know. We don't know the extent of it. I don't know. And he's tough enough. It's not an excuse that he was bringing up. But he was different after that. There's a clear difference between the injured Casey Thompson that was out there. And you got to play hurt, by the way. That's just the reality of the game. I think that's part of it, too. But based on the off-season activity, it seems like Sark is unhappy with both options. And he'd like to upgrade, possibly. Anwar Richardson reported this earlier today. Anwar Richardson of OrangeBloods.com. He reported that via Twitter. Former Ohio State quarterback Quinn Ewers is scheduled to visit Texas on Saturday this weekend, according to sources close to the situation. Ewers is deciding between Texas and Texas Tech, but TCU was recently eliminated. Those close to the situation hope Ewers will decide by Monday. So,
there's a lot of smoke this morning. Lots of people that claim to have sources, and I don't mean Anwar. I just mean people on Twitter. You know,
yeah.
I'll take Anwar on that one for sure, and that seems to be the case. Meeting.
It's Texas, so degrees of separation. You know, I know there are people that know people.
Could be true. That's what I'm saying. I have no idea.
We have no idea. Yeah, so I'm not trying to hate on anybody who's got something out there.
Wall. Some of those numbers are real, Rod. I've dialed.
Yeah, you want to dial all of them?
Yeah,
exactly.
Some of them are real, but this is huge. I've been saying for a little while that the timing for getting out of the ditch, which is what Texas is in, if 15 years ago I'm talking to you, Rod, and I said, and Texas is in this spot, and I said, I had a dream and this is how they can get out of it. And I gave you all the things that are in play right now to help them get out of it, whether that's name, image, and likeness and all this money, whether that's the creation of the transfer portal, whether that's the coaching carousel and a lot of these guys, if we're talking about recruits or players that are already there, I've lost relationships with coaching staffs that are all over the country now. You would have said, yeah, Kev, that's great. None of that's real. All this stuff has been infused into the college landscape. Mm-hmm. And what it's done is it gives a team like Texas, which usually has to win to some degree or get some good pub mm-hmm. on the field, which they didn't do. They had a 6-game losing streak. They were the national laughingstock in some circles for a lot of the year. That 6-game losing streak part of the year, that you can get out of that and really get talent by not winning. This is a perfect situation for them to do that, Rod.
Yeah, no, it is. And some people don't really like the way it's working out and how, you know, Quinn Ewers is kind of manipulating the system, but he's just being smart about it. Honestly, I hate to say it, but he is cashing in on his value. And I, at this point, we don't even know if he's going to be good. We know he has all the measurables. We know that you can, all the projections say that he's going to be great. But, I mean, there have been projections that have failed before. I mean, so we know that. But my point is, he is really smart, or his representation. They're really smart. And I know it doesn't look good, and people don't like it. They'll say it's kind of sleazy and, you know, that he is being a little selfish.
Right.
And I get all that. But in terms of him looking at himself as a brand, and in this new, as you talked about, this new landscape of college sports where there's name, image, and likeness and the ability to transfer via the transfer portal, now you can do it without penalty. I mean, who can argue with him? He's probably going to end up making, I don't know, $5-6 million before he ever actually takes
a serious snap.
A serious snap, like an actual snap that matters, a relevant snap.
Right.
I can't be mad at that. That's the Kardashian model. I mean, that's just maximization.
Yeah,
maximize your circumstance.
And we'll get into kind of some of more at 4 o'clock, just kind of more of our thoughts on, is this going the right direction? But it is the direction, and so you can't hate the player, right? You can hate the game. We can get into that a tad, but it's just kind of weird. I mean, the fact that we don't know if this guy's going to be a good college quarterback. If you're Texas, we've talked about it, they don't have luxuries. They haven't had luxuries. And I think the coaching staff realized that as the year went on, that you don't have the luxuries that you would like, whether that's game plan, scheming, certainly personnel. And so they have to go do this. They have to go after it. I would think NIL is going to help. I'm sure Tech has something set up too. And you just got to close the deal. This would be a big one to get. Any concern about the Arch Manning stuff? We've kind of talked about that a little bit. Texas has to win right now, right?
Yeah,
you can't be concerned about that guy who's a year away.
Yeah, you can't be worried about that. You got to worry about right now. And the here and now is upgrade the quarterback position as much as possible. And we know how fleeting the quarterback position is, right? I went over these numbers in Raj Rand the day a couple of days ago. But, you know, since 2006, Texas has signed 21 scholarship quarterbacks. And only one of them basically has been a multiple-year starter, and that's Sam Ehlinger. That was it. The rest of them, hell, I think 10 of them end up transferring, 2 retired due to injury, 3 of them changed positions. Only 3 of them exhausted their eligibility playing the quarterback position: Case McCoy, Tyrone Swoops, and Sam Ehlinger. That's it. You still got Hudson Card, Charles Wright, and Casey Thompson on campus. And we said we all agree one of them probably is going to transfer before it's all said and done. But that is just the nature of the beast. It's one of those things. It's one of the problems. It's like a more money, more problem scenario. If you got a lot of money, you pay higher amount in taxes, right? You complain about it, but hey, it's one of the inconveniences of having a lot of money. Same thing with these blue blood football programs now, with the transfer portal being available and now being able to transfer without penalty. And we know quarterback being the most marketable position when it comes to name, image, and likeness. These guys know, all right, I can move around and I can find a better opportunity, either to market myself or monetize my brand or whatever it may be. So even before all those things happened that you brought up, right, that has totally changed the amateurism as we know it, even if it is a thing anymore. 50% of blue chip quarterbacks, 4- and 5-star quarterbacks, were transferring. It was even before they were able to transfer without penalty.
Yeah.
So we know that's going to increase, right? And for in the SEC, it's a little bit higher in some places. If you look at even the top, you're looking at Elite 11 recruits, it's around 45% of Elite 11 recruits end up transferring. So there's no way you can stop that. So all you can do is stockpile quarterbacks. They're like socks and underwear. You can never have too many. Just keep bringing them in, and then they're going to transfer. They're going to get hurt. Some are going to be a bust because you just, oh, you know what? It was a failure of evaluation. Some guys are going to change positions, whatever it may be. You increase your odds for success, and you kind of, I mean, in terms of the margin for error, at least you decrease it a little bit more when you just bring in more quarterbacks, as many as you can.
Yeah. No, it's already been like that, and you pointed that out, but with the portal and the not penalizing people, yeah, it's just going to get, that's just going to be the lay of the land, so you have to get used to it. You got to continue to recruit.
Yeah.
I will say that it does seem like, as you said, Anwar said they're going to try and have a decision by Monday. That could only help, because whether he's at Tech or Texas, you need to try and recruit as much as possible to upgrade. This is not being at Ohio State where you'd still want to help out the class, but you've got to turn stuff around there with their talent. We saw Texas Tech. Mm-hmm. They got better. They were weird throughout the year, but they came in here and lost 70-35. We know the issues Texas has with talent. So you want to get that going because that's where an Evan Stewart or a Kelvin Banks or any of those guys on offense, Rod, you know this better than I do, that you get a class snowballing like that, you can maybe pick some pieces up.
Yeah. I mean, and a guy like Quinn Ewers, I mean, he can be, you know, that, I call it the we are the world factor, right? He can be that, you know, that really that chess piece that you bring in that could all have all the other dominoes kind of fall into place. And I think for, you know, for Longhorn fans, I mean, right now it would be an upset. Let's be honest. If Quinn Ewers picks Texas Tech, that's an upset.
I think Tech's legitimately in it.
I know they are, but I know they are. I know, so I'm not saying that.
Just him growing up a Texas fan, that would be an upset.
It's an upset, considering now the name, image, and likeness world that we live in. And like I said, Texas wants to be the name, image, and likeness capital of college football, but college sports too.
They're going to list him at guard too.
What?
Ewers, if he comes. That was one of the pitches. Well, you just get that 50K.
Well, he's got to get
He's going to play quarterback, dude, but it's going to be a different guard quarterback.
Dude, he's going to get way more than 50K.
No, you kidding me? I was just saying just an add-on.
Dude, he might
Which would be, a for him, a small add-on.
Man, he might get paid more than Sark. With his sauce.
He could.
I'm just kidding. But some of the coaches on Texas campus, yes, he will get paid more than them.
He will. But he's going to have to come in and play well.
But I know.
And we don't know.
You still got to compete and win the job.
What if Malik Murphy comes in and beats him out?
That's one of those subjects that we haven't talked about really. But
if they sign Jake Haener?
It's going to become more of an issue. Yeah, these guys are making a lot of money. And it's like, well, the company's like, hey, I want him to start. I was like, well, that's why they're not connected to the actual football program.
Yeah.
Remember these. That's why the coaches, how they can pitch it in recruiting is weird. I'm not sure how that works. But remember, this is not connected to the football program. This is separate.
Mm-hmm.
All right? This is a separate deal. I don't know how separate. Trust me, it's probably in the same building, but separate offices.
It's separate.
It's separate.
Thank God, too.
Church and state, baby. Church and state.
So I mentioned Evan Stewart, the five-star receiver who recently committed to Texas A&M. I have no idea whether he would flip. But just guys, big-time guys in the state that maybe you think you can pull. One of the guys who's out of state but decommitted from LSU, this may be the best name ever. I know Chad's the name guy on the station. Please tell me you guys saw DeColdest Crawford.
Yeah, I remember that name. Yeah.
The coldest.
Oh yeah, I remember when he was getting recruited last year.
See,
thought that was a great name.
Everyone does just because of the name. He's a 4-star receiver,
the coldest.
Or some people actually have him as a 3-star receiver. But he's from Shreveport. Was committed to LSU, 6'1", 180, and he's going to also visit Texas. So trying to make this late push, Rod.
I got people in Shreveport. So
any of them?
I'm sure they know
as cool as the coldest.
I'm sure they know the coldest people.
That beats Solomon any day of the week.
Oh yeah, the coldest. I mean, that is. You gotta be good.
You better ball.
The coldest. You gotta ball out. I mean, let's be honest. You gotta be the coldest. Because if you're not, then people gonna mock you. Like tell you, the coldest Crawford. Man, you're on the bench.
Get out of here.
So we'll see if he's the coldest. That's pretty good. I love that. But you know, it's a whirlwind effect of recruiting, and especially in Texas right now, there's a lot of buzz right about the Pancake Factory and Horns with Heart, that initiative. You also have, you know, the Clarkfield Collective. That's the buzz. And now with Quinn Ewers and all these guys decommitting, there's just a lot of buzz about Texas, and they could end up kind of pulling a coup here at the, you know, right before we get to signing day, where they pull in Quinn Ewers. It reminds, I bring up the 99 recruiting class because, you know, Mac Brown sort of did it. He didn't do it, you know, quite this theatrical. But when he pulled in Chris Sims, who was the number one recruit in the country, and flipped him from Tennessee, by the way, at the time, which was a big deal, and then brought in Corey Redding, who was the number one defensive player in the country, he not only got the state of Texas, everybody fell in line, but even nationally, everybody's ears started to perk up like, man, what's going on there at Texas? That could happen with this Quinn Ewers. And then we end up being the number one recruiting class in the country because after that, there was no question. Everybody wanted to play with Sims and Corey Redding, including myself.
Right.
I mean, that's just the reality of it. You got those guys, you'll get everybody else too.
So in my lifetime with college football, when someone flips it and they haven't been winning, that's when your ears perk up. So Mac went 9-3 in 98. 99, they won, ended up losing in the Big 12 championship game to Nebraska, but they were turning it, and you could actually pinpoint it and say, well, they've been winning. How that thing
And they had the going. Heisman year of Ricky. That helped.
Absolutely. That helped out a ton.
In terms of the buzz that was building.
Because you go 9-3 and beat Mississippi State, but you're nationally in front of everything.
Boom.
Because Ricky wins the Heisman.
And then
high
draft pick. So there was a lot of buzz about Texas in that season, too.
Exactly.
That obviously our young Rod B paid attention to.
So you can see why. Now, when a program starts flipping recruits and starts bringing in a ton of good recruits and they weren't necessarily winning or getting good buzz, that's when usually my ears perk up and I go, I know what that is in my lifetime.
That's true.
That's loading up bags.
Good point.
This is loading up bags, too.
It is.
It's just legal now and above the table.
It is. I mean, that's exactly what's happening because Texas didn't even make a bowl game. You're talking about a 5-7 team that's now creating buzz in the offseason.
With this many bowl games.
Yeah, and you're right. So they're taking advantage of the new landscape of college sports.
We'll get into more of this coming up at 5 o'clock. And like I said, we're talking name, image, and likeness, kind of the bigger landscape picture of it at 4 o'clock. It's that veteran quarterback you talked about that Sark had hinted towards wanting to get. And would that be Miles Brennan? Is that Dylan Gabriel? Yeah. Is that, I mentioned Jake Haener earlier on.
Max Johnson now, right?
Max Johnson.
He's out there now.
Read my mind, who just put his name into the portal. Max Johnson got better as the year went on.
He did. I think he ended up with 27 touchdowns,
right.
6 interceptions, somewhere around there. No, he did. He got much better. And he's got a brother.
He's got a brother who was committed to LSU.
That's the number one tight end in the 2022 class.
That's Brad's good sperm.
Ooh. Well, I think
Brad
both,
said that.
They're both pretty damn good. Did Brad said, say that for real? You're
he
joking.
He said that.
He really?
Oh,
his
probably.
Wife did not. Oh, I see that.
Maybe.
Now you put the words in Brad's mouth. Come on.
Probably not.
He's probably proud of both of his.
I didn't say he wasn't proud.
His offspring, I should say.
I'm proud of my bad sperm. Or less than better sperm.
What did they call Aaron? I think they were talking about what Aaron Hogan called Aaron Hogan's son, his seed.
His seed, yeah.
Aaron's seed.
My seed.
Which is a little uncomfortable. But no, I think if
Aaron's just jealous of his hair.
He does have really good hair. I
got the locks, man.
He does. But hey, you can always brag. You can always brag when your son has nice hair. Like, he got it from me.
Right.
Even though it's nicer than yours.
That's what I'm saying.
But you can say, hey, I had some part in that. You can brag about that. But I don't know if they're a package deal or not, though. The Max Johnson and his brother, I don't know if they're a package deal. But they went to LSU together. So maybe they want to.
There was some package going on.
And I was like, maybe they want to play together. So if that's the case, Texas should be looking at it. I'm with you on that one. That's a nice name thrown out there, too. This is the most robust transfer portal that we've ever seen, and it's only getting more and more refreshed.
Yeah,
with talent, and it's top notch level talent. Now we're talking about blue chip players. I mean, it used to be just that's a blue chip player that turned out to be a bust. He didn't work out.
Right?
No. These are guys who are just sophomores and freshmen who just got there, deciding, no, I'm leaving because my coach is leaving. I'm leaving.
There's never a good time to have a decade of bad pub. And a national narrative on you coming off of a 5-7 year. But if there is, this is the year.
No better time to rebuild a program.
No better time.
No better time to rebuild a program.
And to do it quickly. Do it Chris Beard style. Right. We'll see if Texas can do that. We'll get back into that throughout the show. Coming up next, more Big 12 football as Texas Tech is looking for a DC. Did they find him? And who's going to be calling plays at OU?
Welcome back to RBKD. It is a Way Back Rap Wednesday, Old School Hip Hop Hump Day. I'm Rod Babers, hanging out with my man Kevin Dunn. You can hit us up via Twitter. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse, Kevin Dunn at KevinDunn01. And my man Patrick doing a great job always, but DJing on a Way Back Rap Wednesday at It's Patrick Davis in the Twitterverse. You can hit him up as well.
I love the song. I don't remember who it was, though.
Turn it up a little bit. Let me try to hear it.
Come on, man. Influential right here.
About to lose the black card.
I should know this. I don't.
Tribe Called Quest.
I should know that too. Exactly. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I will say that I actually don't know my Tribe Called Quest. I like them, but I don't know them. I respect them, and I recognize where they stand in the, you know, kind of the hierarchy and the pantheon of hip hop. But I'm not really a fan. Like, I don't like their style of hip hop. Okay. For me personally, when I'm jamming. That's why I don't know a lot of Tribe Called Quest. I will admit that.
Well, aren't you a negative Nelly?
No, I respect them. They're awesome.
No, they're great. I can get what you're saying. Yes,
it's not my thing.
Yeah,
oh, it's stylistic.
Yeah, they have a unique style, and it's not really something I'm into. That's all. Yeah, I'm not hating on them. It's one of those things that a lot of people love it and they think it's great. I'm just not into it.
I'm totally kidding with
you,
man.
It's like Mila Kunis.
The Mila Kunis thing's different. Because you set up the Mila Kunis thing to make people that are attracted to her feel like a pedophile.
I did not know. You just brought something like that up. I didn't bring that.
Let me test this. Patrick, listen to this. You be the judge on this.
Right. Okay.
What do you say every time you talk about Mila Kunis?
What?
What do you say, Rod?
No.
What do you say every time?
You're bringing this up, and now, see, I was trying.
Joe, what he brought up Mila Kunis?
I just said I'm not into her. That's all.
Patrick.
You want to bring up why I'm not into her.
He says because she looks like a 14-year-old boy.
I never said that.
So he sets it up
said
well.
That.
Was it 15? Was it 12?
Nope. I said a teenage. She has a teenage boy body. That's all. That's all I said. I never said she. I never said an age. All right?
You never gave an age.
Could be 19. That's all.
That makes it so much better.
Now you're making me feel worse because I was going young.
So I don't know why. That's what I'm saying. You're the one.
In my mind.
I said teenage. That's all I said. All right. There you go. Boom. Yeah, you get yourself a job.
You would have been a good lawyer. We all know exactly what you were saying and thinking. Look at you just getting out of this.
You know why you know? Because you looked at Mila Kunis. You're like, oh, hold up. Uh-huh. Boom. Anyway, moving on.
I never said I disagreed. I just said you made me feel bad.
Moving on. See? All right. Let's talk about coaching hires, please.
Okay.
Subject change.
Any youngins?
Let's talk about coaching changes. Oh, how about this? Joey McGuire is actually building a good coaching staff there at Texas Tech.
No surprise.
He hired Tim DeRuiter as his defensive coordinator.
He was at A&M?
Man, he's got an extensive resume. I couldn't even tell you all the places he's been. He was, but I'm talking about the places.
I can, because it's in front of me now. He was at A&M and looked at it today.
Yeah, he's been around.
In 09, their defense was 104, I think, in scoring defense, and went down to 20th. Changed from a 4-3 to a 3-4. Became actually the interim head coach for Texas A&M in 2011. Had Air Force and Navy roots before that. Then was at Fresno State as the head coach for, 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
Then was at Cal as a DC, and then Oregon this last year as a DC.
Yeah. No, that's a win.
What
that's
do you like
win.
About him?
I mean, I think that's a win. Well, he's versatile.
He is.
I mean, he's one of those guys that he's willing to mold his defense around whatever talent he has. If you're at a place like Tech, that's big to have that type of malleability, right? To be able to be malleable enough and like a chameleon enough to be able to put out a competent product even when you don't have the most ideal pieces at every position. They also brought in defensive backs, Marcel Yates, along with that pretty much their staff is done. Josh Cochran, he's their tight ends coach.
Wow.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
That's interesting. Yeah, they brought him in as a tight ends coach. So he's been doing really well. And they brought in Zarnell.
He was a good functional player here. Cochran's one of those guys. I know people are going to hear this and take it as a dig. Don't. It's just a real statement. He got the most out of his talent.
Yeah. No, I didn't even know. I was like, is that him? And I saw Jeff Howard tweet about Josh Cochran.
Good for him, man.
Good for Josh Cochran. And Zarnell Fitch, don't know much about him, but he's the D-line coach.
What's his name? Zarnell Fitch?
He came from TCU, though.
Okay.
I believe he's a Gary Patterson guy. Probably with Gary Patterson, 2016, I think he ended up being the D-line coach. But apparently that staff, if you do the research, I mean, he is Joey McGuire. I don't know how to say Jerry. Joey McGuire has hit a home run with his staff. He initially targeted Patrick Toney, the former Louisiana DC mm-hmm. as his DC, but then Billy Napier took him with him because Billy Napier wanted Jim Knowles.
Right, and couldn't get him.
And then couldn't get Jim Knowles because Jim Knowles decided he want. I guess he had better offers. Well, I don't guess. We know he had better offers because he went to Ohio State.
Yeah, or at least in his mind, better offers.
Is it better? Was Ohio State a better gig for Jim Knowles than Florida would be going with Billy Napier?
That's a great question.
Because the word on the street is he was pretty much offered the gig.
But I would still say the Big Ten's easier to defend than the SEC.
You know what? You might have just, but it's the SEC. Yeah, it's the East, though. A little different, right?
That's true. That's fair.
It's a little different.
I mean, it's Georgia right now. That's
right. It's like, and Georgia doesn't have they have a nice offense, but it's not high powered and advanced and progressive or anything.
No, it's a seventh grade.
Right.
C team in terms of play calling.
So there's an argument to be made.
They got seven plays
but
to pick for
the Big Ten has none. Well, I mean, the Big Ten really hasn't advanced offensively that much. I mean, they're running modern concepts, but they're not considered groundbreaking.
No, and how did Ohio State lose to Michigan finally?
Yeah, ground and pound. They turned into a fist fight.
It's exactly
football
what it
was. In the phone booth.
Right.
Yeah. No, you're right. So Jim Knowles, we'll see. I mean, I think that's a good gig for him, but you're right. I'm not really sure which one would have been better. He obviously thought Ohio State was a better gig for him.
Yeah, he did. And Ohio State's done a good job of hiring Oklahoma State guys. We saw Yurcich go there. They've kind of picked there
a little bit. That's a good point. I didn't think about
really that. Really what it does, I was laughing with my dad last night. I go, well, Oklahoma State's the one that found these guys out of nowhere.
Gundy does a great job.
Found them in some village. Like, across the pond, it feels like.
He does.
But Oklahoma State does a good job of them poaching once they realize that they're good, really good, high-level D1 coordinators. And I was laughing with my dad. I said, don't laugh, because that's not that easy. Trust me as a Texas fan.
No,
just because
you're
poaching doesn't mean that you're going to get the right hire because you have those resources. But Ohio State has hired so well, obviously for me, after John Cooper.
Yeah, I think Shippensburg was where Gundy found Yurcich. It was Shippensburg or something like that.
Yeah.
No, he is. He does. He goes. That's how you know he's a football theorist. I mean, he does his research. He's going to look for guys at all levels of football. I couldn't even tell you what Shippensburg,
Pennsylvania.
What,
I'm pretty
what
sure
what league they play in. Okay. Like, I don't know. Like,
they don't.
What level?
It's a rec league.
Exactly. Like, I have no idea. But yeah, I mean, that's how that's how good he is. He does his research. So he'll have to do that again on defense side of the ball. And that's the question. Because we all know this was out of character for him to have a defensive run game, ball control, field position model, right? He's used to having a prolific offense that really runs the show for him. Now, where do you go? Do you keep, because you don't have Jim Knowles, do you still stick with that identity?
I think you do.
It's been working for him.
Well, as I said, what you try and do, because ideally, I mean, it's not like Gundy drew it up to be exactly like this. Gundy drew it up defensively, he did. But Gundy drew it up that Spencer Sanders was going to be a big-time college quarterback and a dual threat, and they were going to be still putting up 40 points a game. What Gundy did so well is realize, no, this is the boat we're in right now, and it's one of our arguments we've had with Texas coaches. Have some realistic, understanding of kind of where you are talent-wise and where the team is.
That's a good point.
And there's guys you recruit. No, Spencer Sanders was a good recruit for Oklahoma State.
He was, but I heard I heard Craig Way say this. Craig Way said, but even in high school, coming out as a recruit, he did have a tendency in big games.
Seaway throwing shade.
To make the big mistake. No, he wasn't throwing shade.
It's exactly what he's doing.
No, he did. He just said that.
And retroactively doing it like on a 16-year-old. This is awful.
He was just talking about that in terms of evaluation. That was one of the knocks against
him. I'm going to call him during the break.
But I know I heard him say that, and I was like, wow, interesting. So,
interesting. Yeah.
They tried to coach that out of it, and it turns out it's kind of part of his football DNA. He did a really good job this year of keeping it, under wraps and pretty reserved and was making good decisions for the most part. But, no doubt, he imploded in that Big 12 title game. But I'll give – I think you're right. No, you nail on the head. He adapted. It wasn't his idea necessarily. He was like, you know what, this is where we are. And give him credit for not being stubborn.
Right.
And trying to force the square peg
into
the round
hole. Like any coach,
hole.
He wanted to score 45 a game and give up 8.
Yeah, no doubt. And I will say this, though. He admits this about 5 years ago, though. He saw the ecosystem. I know he's a football theorist. He saw the ecosystem of the Big 12 and decided to go go to positionless football in the back seven and decides to go recruiting wise. He said, no, we don't recruit positions in the back seven. We just recruit body types and athletes. He said, because that's what you need in this day and age. I need hybridism. I need football players on the back end who, no matter what down or distance it is, they're spread babies and they're comfortable in space no matter what the situation is. That's why you end up with Malcolm Rodriguez, right? It was a wrestler quarterback who ended up being a safety that you recruited, and now he's your linebacker.
Devin Harper was whatever.
Yeah, and all those guys. You have all those DBs that they all kind of interchangeable.
Yeah.
That was his brain. That was his brainchild, and that actually was the way to go. And you know I'm a big fan of positionless football on both sides of the ball. I think it's the future of football. I was saying that even when Gundy did it, and I think Gundy, it was the right move by him. So you're right. He might decide to stay this model because of the combination of those two things.
So Joe Cook had tweeted this last night, and I thought it was funny. He said, you know who the new DC should be at Oklahoma State? He said, stay in-house. And he put a picture up of Gary Gibbs. And I hadn't seen Gary Gibbs in years.
I don't even know if I have done the research on Gary Gibbs.
Gary Gibbs was the Oklahoma coach. Okay. He was one of those bad hires we talk about.
Wow, you're talking about a long time ago.
So, you know, remember 94, wing back reverse?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Gary Gibbs was the head coach.
Okay.
Watson Brown was the offensive coordinator who called that.
Okay.
Stoney Clark made the tackle. Yeah, Gibbs was after Switzer, and then you had what? Then you had Schnellenberger for a year, and then Blake. Those were the three bad hires in my lifetime.
And he went to the league for a while.
He went to the league. I remember that.
He went to the league for a long time.
He was back in college. He's been a defensive analyst for Oklahoma State.
I didn't realize. Okay, he was in a league until before then. Before then for like 15 years.
Yeah, right, which is probably why I forgot about him.
Okay. Oh, nice. That's a nice pull by them.
I keep up with pro coaches, but I don't think was he a DC anywhere?
Did he? Yes, he was. He was a DC with Kansas City, actually, for one, an interim there. But he was a DC with LSU last in 2001.
So I wonder if he's a position coach in the league.
I never thought about that. And I wondered that's why he was there to learn the defense.
Could be. And he's got the relationship with Kale, obviously, who he would have recruited to Oklahoma.
I wonder if, that's a guy. I didn't know that. That's a nice little nugget.
Jeff Lebby, looks like it's going to be a done deal to OU. Jeff Lebby he's a good offensive coordinator, man. And, you know, it's always tough to tell how much of that was Lebby, how much of that was Lane Kiffin. But Lebby, even going back to his Veer and Shoot days, obviously, at Baylor, my question was never on the field. It was obviously the stuff off the field, but I guess he's cleared that.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously don't care about the backlash. There's going to be some backlash. There should be some backlash and some blowback from that, but they don't care about it. They figure, I'm sure they have done the public relations research about it, and they figure it's something that, as long as they're winning games, they can withstand. It's interesting, though. His offense, that Veer and Shoot there with, you know, they're now paired up with Venable's defense. We'll see. I mean, it's not, to me, like I said, Longhorn fans, it's not something that you should be fearing.
No.
That combination. And I'm not saying it's going to be bad or terrible, but it's obviously not going to be Lincoln Riley, Alex Grinch. Like, I remember, if they brought in Joe Brady, I'd been like, okay, now, guys, they brought in Joe Brady.
Do you remember when I walked in when Alex Grinch was hired?
Exactly.
We were doing different shows, I told you, I go, right, this isn't good.
I remember. Yeah.
Like, I was scared of that.
Yep.
I'm glad those two cats are out of town.
So now, I'm sure Venables is going to be
three cats. Biedenbo, I'll help you move in.
And now you got to find, who's the old line coach that you're going to get to replace that guy? Yeah. It won't be as good as Biedenbo, and that's the whole point.
No.
None of these guys are even close to being on the trajectory of a Lincoln Riley I'll say Brent Venables, of course, is a great defensive mind, but the combination of Lincoln Riley and Alex Grinch, probably better.
Did you see Venables' picks that OU Twitter put up? Just his introductory, or he's taking pictures, in a suit?
No. Did he do a horns down?
No, he didn't do that.
I thought I saw that on Twitter.
Maybe he did.
I think
he looks like a wax figure.
Oh, has he had work done?
I don't know if it's that or if it was the lighting or makeup or whatever, but it
looked like something, some fake statue or something.
Yeah,
looked weird.
Looked like a He-Man character or something like that.
Maybe they did something with the photo. They probably brushed it up or something.
What the hell they're doing?
They probably tried to make him look good.
Yeah,
man.
I know.
And trying to make him look Hollywood.
I know. We'll see how that plays out.
It had to be better than Lincoln Riley's press conference, which looked like some crazy freak show SNL skit.
Oh, it was crazy. Great. It was funny.
It was funny, but it was they intentionally, they mean it to be funny?
Were there
or was it ironically
were there
funny?
USC cheerleaders there?
Yeah, with the sweaters on.
Then it was positive.
Yeah, it was sweaters on. They were front and center. Matter of fact, they were way too close to the camera. Mm. And they were just like.
Can they ever be?
Nah, I guess you're right about that. That's true. Good point. They were front and center.
Yeah.
With the sweaters on.
Hey, keep the sweaters on.
That's true. That's the best part of the press conference, actually.
Or actually take them off. Hey, we'll talk some NBA coming up next. The Mavs blow a lead. And what's going on with Luka as he comes into the season? Well, the Mavs had it last night. They had the Nets exactly where they wanted them. Checked it out and was thinking, all right, this will be good for the Mavs. Mavs had lost four consecutive games at home. They were at 500 at 11-11, and they outplayed them. It was Kristaps looked good in the first half. And actually, the guys at halftime talked about it a little bit, kind of mixed it up, just wasn't taking all threes. Mm-hmm. Luka, even though they weren't shooting that well, they looked pretty good in the first half and had this thing, Rod, all the way until the fourth quarter. And then Kevin Durant and James Harden did what they do. They said postgame, we know when it's time to win. And they just hadn't been hitting shots. The Mavs, I believe, shot, what, 20% from beyond the arc and hoisted 46 threes. Yeah, there were 9 of 46. And
they had a 17-point lead.
A 17-point lead, man.
17-point lead.
I know, man. I'm watching it. You could just feel it slipping away. They actually got a good look. They're down by three to finish this thing off. Good defense by the Nets. It was Luka, Kristaps kind of going back and forth and just trying to get an open look, giving it to each other. Finally, they get it to Timmy Hardaway Jr. Hardaway gets a good look to tie it up and back rims it. He was 0 for 7 from beyond the arc.
Yeah, and Luka's questioning the conditioning of his own conditioning.
Yeah, people are questioning him, and he's admitting it.
Did he get criticized for his conditioning?
He's been criticized really the last couple of years.
Oh, about I knew he was criticized about
Reggie
him.
Reggie Miller was criticizing
him. I remember the people talking about that he basically looks pudgy, that he doesn't look like he works out a lot. That was kind of I didn't know they were actually criticizing his conditioning. That's something totally different. But I didn't. Did Luka have a reputation for wearing down in games in the fourth quarter?
Nah, he's got a reputation.
Remember,
for
James Harden had that reputation,
right,
for a long time, that, oh man, the fourth quarter, James Harden, especially against elite competition, you can wear him down.
I think there's some wearing down that goes with his rep, but not necessarily. It's a lot of it's been because he's got to do too much. But the narrative, and I think factually the last couple of years, is that he's come in overweight. Come into the season overweight.
Patrick, you watch a lot of NBA. Is that the narrative about Luka?
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of it is when it comes down to the end of the season. If you watch any fourth quarter at the end of the season, Luka is limping off the feet, off the court.
That's it.
Like he is about to die at the end of every game, go to every timeout. And so
but
it's not necessarily
like
at the beginning of the year, but it's just kind of, if you're not in the right shape at the beginning of the year, by the end of the year, you're done. And so, I mean, he's basically averaging the same stats he always has. It's not like he's doing anything different, but I think the Mavs have had the problem the past two or three years that they don't have a great percentage of last-second shots.
Yeah.
Luka hits a few of them, but they're kind of crazy. And if you want to put that on somebody, you put it on the star player and go, well, you need to be at 110%. That's not who he is. He's never going to be that guy.
Mm.
He should lose some weight just to keep himself a little bit healthier. But, I mean, I don't think that's as big of a problem as why is Porzingis still on this team?
That's a good question. So Reggie Miller said that Doncic is plodding up and down the court, and he's got to trim down. Luka said, and Patrick hit a lot of it there. I mean, you always see him limping. There's always like some ankle or knee issue.
Yeah.
Some guys just walk the old man walk.
He's got it.
I play with guys like that. I'm like, man, this dude's always limping. And then when it's time to go full speed, they're, you know, hit another gear on you.
Dre Bly had that, right?
Dre Bly was
old man gut and walk.
He had the love handles. Yeah.
I mean, we saw Xavier Worthy do it at the end of the season.
Yeah. Exactly.
Xavier Worthy looked like everything was the end of the season, and then he'd go catch another touchdown.
Right.
Exactly. That's a great point.
Luka said, I had the Olympics, took 3 weeks off, and I relaxed a little bit, maybe too much. I just got to get back on track. There's no doubt he's come in a little bit overweight, but Patrick mentioned it, he's still averaging, I think, 26 a game. His numbers are all pretty much
there. And his minutes
are
the same.
Minutes are the same.
That's, I think, the biggest
they're
one.
They're 11
you look
and 12,
at.
And that's part of it, too.
But, he's playing about 34 minutes a game, which is what he normally averages. I mean, he has too many turnovers, but he's always had too many turnovers because he just tries to get a little cute sometimes. But other than that, I mean, I think you can look at a lot of problems with that team. I don't. If you keep going back to it's Luka's fault, then you're missing the bigger picture that he has to do everything.
Yep.
And that Porzingis is okay, but he's not the second guy on that team. And in the crunch time, he's almost gone.
Yeah.
Because he's not able to really move without the ball the way he needs to get open shots. And so it's Hardaway or Luka trying to get open for shots at the end of the game. And they just basically try and box Porzingis out and put a little body on him because he's a center. You can do that. And they basically take him out of the play.
He's also a toothpick center, and that's one of the questions with his game. He got some closer looks, and they did a good job of feeding him. Durant said after the game, he said, they run essentially two plays. So we knew what they were going to do. We know how to defend Luka, and we're not going to let him engineer stuff and create for other people.
Well, and just make Luka work hard, as Patrick was saying. It just wears him down throughout the fourth quarter. You know he's going to get his, but you make him work as hard as humanly possible to get it by the fourth quarter because they don't have any really support system around him. Yeah, he wears down. I could see that.
It's been a rough year for Texas NBA teams so far. Ooh, Mavericks are 11-12.
Rockets are just
seventh place. Rockets are 7-16. Spurs are 8-15.
Man, we had that 4-game win streak. Spurs did.
And then I know.
Had it right down to the end against the Suns, and Chris Paul did just stabbed him again. Like it was a couple plays Chris Paul did in a row and won that game. And then last night they looked like they looked at the early beginning of the season against the Knicks.
But I'll say this about the Spurs. Aren't they really young? Isn't like the youngest,
oh, they're super
the youngest
young.
Team that's
yeah,
that Pop
I think
ever
Doug McDermott's old. Well, Thad Young's technically the oldest guy on the team, but he's not really playing. Doug McDermott is pretty much the oldest rotation guy, and he's 28, 29.
Yeah. They're
babies. So they're a really young team.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe one of Pop's toughest coaching jobs might be one of his best, though, if it turns out to be a good they make the playoffs.
Right. Yeah. No, Pop's trying to do his Belichick here.
That's exactly right, that I can do it without the big three.
He's also, what, like 20 wins, 22 wins away from being the all-time winningest coach?
Oh, is that
Ooh,
it?
Yeah, he's also right there.
Okay.
So if he can get past that hump, then this is probably his last year. But it's that he's almost the all-time winningest coach. If you count playoffs, he already is. But if you don't count playoffs, it's a couple more wins.
I didn't know that. Okay.
I didn't know he was good that close. You think he'd retire, though?
I mean, you figure at some point, you have to at some point.
You can down a job. Lots of people do it.
He's got to at one point. I think
he'll still be involved in the organization even after. It's just a question of when does he pass it on? Does he pass it on to Becky Hammond? All those questions of how seamlessly can we make this? Or am I going to have 2 to 3 rebuilding seasons and then be like, well, I got to get out now because now I'm 85.
Yeah. That's one thing about the Spurs organization. Everybody still contributes after they're done to the Spurs efforts, except for Kawhi. He'll be the only star that won't come back.
And Vinny Del Negro.
That was my guy growing up.
Was it really?
Yeah, because I looked just like him. He taught me how to shoot free throws.
1 hour in, we got 3 to go. We'll get back to name, image, and likeness. A lot of purists are upset. I've talked to a lot of people, and we just hear it. People are like, is this already gone too far? Rod and I will kind of dig in and give our thoughts. This is RBKD.